Hi, this is JJ, the Practical Alchemist. Here at UK Health Radio, we're hugely saddened by the loss at New Year of my co-presenter, Dr. Mark Goulston. But we hope that you'll appreciate the chance to hear once again one of our Hurt Less, Live More shows in honour of a special friend. Here it is now. Hello and welcome to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and psychiatrist and coach, Dr. Mark Goulston. And this is the show where we go into different aspects of all the hurts that we've suffered in our lives, and we hopefully can find ways to move through those hurts and live a much more fulfilling life. And Mark, we've got a great guest with us today, haven't we? Adil Khan. I'll let you introduce Adil.
He is a great guest, and I've gotten to know him rather well. He's a specialist in, you know, the new field of regenerative medicine, which is helping people to live more vital and longer lives, tapping into what they already have, and then it's crossed over into the area of stem cells. And he works with, you know, some of the best-known athletes, celebrities, royal families in the world. And he's really on the cutting edge. And I told him that this is about hurt less, live more. And he was on my podcast. And one of the things we talked about was his story, especially the story of his sister dying. And then his kind of going into he kind of spiraled downward because he couldn't really be around his family in the aftermath of that. And that actually propelled him into, you know, both medicine, finishing his studies and what he's doing in the world. And then also I've been working with him, and another place where he's trying to hurt less is, like many people, he avoids conflict because he wants to please people. And when you avoid conflict that you have to confront, it can hurt a lot more. So yes. Adil, welcome, welcome. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, but also that journey, because what really touched me, and you had me at hello when you were on my podcast, my wake up call, was, you know, kind of your journey and especially how the effect of your sister's death. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, we can definitely talk about the conflict part too, because that's also salient nowadays. And I think my journey, hopefully sharing my experience, will give some insight and some hope to other people. And that's kind of what I hope. And it's I think the name of the podcast is perfect, because that's kind of what I went through, which is I was hurting so much that I just didn't want to do anything. And I did lose all hope. So how did I come back from losing all hope? So yeah, just to give people the story, as a physician, we have to go through some grueling training called residency training. So they call it residency because, you know, back in the day, you were basically living at the hospital as a resident. And so as a resident, you're basically, you know, you're on call, you're kind of covering night shifts, sometimes even day shifts, even after night shifts. And so it's not an easy job. And it's arguably the hardest time for a physician in their training process. And so it's not easy to begin with. And many people struggle even without, you know, personal issues. And during my first year of residency training, my younger sister unexpectedly passed away, and I was in a different city from where my family was. It was about, you know, a 4 or 5 hour drive. So it wasn't like something I could go back all the time. And essentially I was by myself in a city where I had no family or friends, because my friends had also moved away because they went through this whole matching process and they were no longer in the city. And so yeah, that's, you know, when you get to the point where it's, you know, you have this tragedy, and then on top of that, you have this really grueling, demanding job. And, you know, you, and then you just kind of figure, you kind of get to a point where you're like, am I going to be able to make it through this? And I think the story I shared with you, and I think that's where sharing is my lowest point, which was I got, of course, with my luck during this time, I was on call on New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, no one wants to do New Year's Eve and Christmas, right? Like those are like the two worst call days probably of the whole year. And so it's just like luck of the straw. And of course, this year was my bad luck. And so so I was on call on New Year's Eve. And so I had to drive back, after the Christmas, during the Christmas holidays to go back. And I remember driving back to the city of Ottawa, and it was snowing and dark and cold. And of course, just, things go through your mind. And then I was kind of just thinking, maybe I should just drive the car off and, what's the point? And that's where, you have so much pain and hurt that you're just kind of like, is it worth, like, what's the point in going on kind of thing? And I'm sure other people have had that too. And so on the other side of it, though, I can tell you is that if you can learn to, take that pain and take that hurt and transform it into something positive, then that gives you more reservoir almost than anyone else, I find, for me personally. Like, it just gives me more motivation and more to do. So even though that was my lowest point, and thankfully I didn't, what really kept me going was my, knowing how much my mom was hurting and my other siblings were hurting, and knowing that they're also going through something similar. And that if I can, and I kept saying to myself, maybe one day I can turn this pain into something positive and eventually, honor her memory and do something meaningful to society. Because that was the way I found meaning in her death. Everyone's going to cope with it differently. And that was the only way I could kind of make sense of it all. And so even though I almost got kicked out of my program and went down, a slippery slope of, not wanting to work. And but I kind of bounced back after, taking some time off and reading that book that we talked about, The Man's Search for Meaning, which is probably one of my favorite books of all time, because it talks about a Holocaust survivor who was able to find meaning when he lost pretty much everything, like his family. And so how do you do that? It's not easy, but that book gave some guidance and insight into being able to not only look into yourself about, what your bigger purpose is and kind of why you're here, but also doing something positive to help people, because that's where most people find meaning. So that's kind of what kept me going. Cause obviously training as a doctor, we get to help people, but what kind of sparked me was that I didn't want to just be an average doctor anymore. I wanted to be a better doctor. I wanted to be even, try to be the best I can be. And so I just went on this journey of trying to find out cutting edge medicine, traveling, seeing how can I help people that other doctors can't help, and finding a gap in that market, because there's so many unmet medical needs and people suffering with so many different conditions. And there was this whole new field of regenerative medicine and cell therapy and gene therapy, and just finding out and discovering that being able to change people's lives where they're previously told there's no option is probably my, I think that's my best feeling in the world right now, is just giving hope to people again and helping them get back to doing what they love, or helping to get back a quality of life or not be disabled or anymore. So that's just, it's super rewarding. And a lot of people wonder how, how do I do? Cause I have multiple businesses. I work full time. I have family, kids. So, and I work out a lot. And so a lot of people are wondering how I do so much. And a lot of it comes back to that transformative process of taking that pain and that hurt I had, and then using that whenever I don't feel motivated or I don't feel like doing something, I remind myself why am I here in the first place? And why was I so lucky to get here? I feel like a lot of it was because, because my sister passed away, I was able to use that and I was able to transform that into something that I probably wouldn't have achieved otherwise. And so I kind of keep reminding myself of that. And that's what keeps me pushing myself. And that way I can impact more people. Even when other people get tired, I can keep going because I have something to draw from. And I'm drawing from the pain and the hurt that happened to me, 7 years ago now. And so, and that pain, I don't think it ever really, goes away necessarily. It's not like it doesn't hurt to think about it or think about her loss, but at least I can say that I was able to take that pain and use it for something meaningful. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I learned through this whole journey.
And so you found your purpose, essentially, and that helped you through. And just to remind us again, because a lot of people reference that book, it's by Viktor Frankl, isn't it? Remind us of the title again, because I think that's something that people would like to look up themselves.
Yeah, it's called Man's Search for Meaning. It's probably my top three favorite books of all time.
Yeah, he was an inspiration to many, many people, that man. Yeah. It's great. And finding purpose, I mean, Mark, that's something that we all, it helps all of us if we're trying to get out of this hurt place, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've interviewed several people who have said that book really helped them turn around their lives. And I'd be interested to deal when you found that book. There's a lot of people who listen, and the word meaning seems abstract. So viscerally, can you dive into how that flipped the switch inside you? And something I want to ask you is, a number of people I know who feel that pain, they don't want to die, but they can't stand the pain. You know, I don't want to die. I don't want to kill myself, but I can't stand the pain. And maybe part of it was, and I was curious, has your sister ever spoken to you and said, Adil, you need to go on. You can't kill yourself because I'm gone. Have you ever had a conversation with her in your mind where she basically said, you need to not fall apart because I died. You need to go on and turn it into something.
I've had conversations like that where it was like, yes, I didn't want to get out of bed. And I kind of almost pictured her kind of standing there and being like, you know, what are you doing? And so mm-hmm. It was that type of thing. And so I guess I have had that. And so it's one of those things where I want to honor her memory. And the only way I can find, at least for me, I can find is doing something meaningful and impactful. And I think, to JJ's point about finding purpose, and a lot of people are purposeless these days, and that's a big problem, especially in my generation and Generation Z as well. And, society has all these constructs and ideas on how to live a life, but a lot of those are just, socially conditioned. And even for me as a doctor, I thought just being a doctor was, that's it. That's my purpose in life. But then I found something so much more meaningful after going through this whole process. It's not just being a doctor, but it's about how to help people that other people can't help, how to create businesses now and technology and other things I can do that can scale and, hopefully help millions of people. And that's really where I found a lot more meaning that I definitely would have never pursued if I hadn't gone through this whole journey. Because a lot of, I think, you're taught, you go to school, you do your thing, you become a doctor and that's it. And then you just live your life and then you retire. And then that's, you lived a good life and that's it. But I think for a lot of people nowadays, I find, a lot of them are changing careers or trying to find other things to do. And they're getting tired of just doing the same thing over and over. So I think everyone has that creativity side inside of them. And finding out what that is for you is a difficult process and not easy, because you have to look inwards.
Let me ask you, I'm not sure we've done this on our coaching calls, but I'd like you to imagine going back to you when you were on that drive and you were thinking, why not just drive off the road? And I'd like you to imagine sitting in the seat next to you as you are now and saying, would you believe it that not only don't you drive off the road, that you finish your residency, there'll be some bumps on the road, but you finish it, and then you step into the future, that you're changing and saving people's lives. You're going to become one of the great doctors of your generation. You're going to push the edge of things. But I could imagine you speaking to you in that car, and that part of you saying, "No way, no way. I just got to make it back to Ottawa, you know." But no way. But could you imagine telling that part of you, "Let me tell you about your future and what you become." And not only that, you're going to get married, you're going to have a family, you're going to be seen as a leader. Could you imagine that scenario and sort of helping that hurt, lost, I don't want to go on part of you, kind of maybe feel a little bit of hope? Like, really? That happens? And then you say, "Yeah, I'm you. It happened. I'm not telling you it's going to happen. I'm telling you it did happen." And can you imagine meeting that part of you and fusing your future that he didn't think he had on that ride with where he was? Could you see the two selves coming together like two DNA strands?
That's basically what it feels like just going through that process. It's almost like it's hard to imagine, but it's like that part of me, it almost still doesn't believe it. It's like, that's where the imposter syndrome comes in, I think, where it's like, how is this possible after everything, you know, and after how low I was and, you know, basically just wanted to make it, just basically wanted to survive. And that's a lot of people, I think, are just in survival mode and they're not really thriving. And so being able to go shift, you know, I think that's where I think a lot of my transformation took part was being able to, you know, get rid of that self-doubt and being able to kind of go on this whole journey of, you know, self-actualization, which is like figuring out why, what's my bigger purpose and meaning and how to achieve that.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Fantastic, Adil. Well, that actually sounds like a very good place for us to take a short break right now. So we'll be back right after this from our station sponsors with Adil Khan and Mark Goulston. Back right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, Dr. Mark Goulston and Dr. Adil Khan. And you're listening to us all on the world's number one talk health radio station. And Mark, you wanted to go back to something that you, I think, may have talked about a little bit on the show, but just, you know, you want to maybe expand a little bit more on that. And that's your experiences at medical school.
Yeah, the thing I did with Adil is something that I've done on myself, because I dropped out of medical school twice, and I probably talked about it on prior shows. And the second time I dropped out was really a low point, I think. And when I dropped out, I didn't know that I was coming back to medical school. I just didn't want to lose my options. And I didn't know that I was coming back to anything. And so I've done that exercise with myself, going back and saying, let me tell you what the next 50 years of your life. And again, I was just kind of lost, and I was a two-time loser. And I said, you're going to finish medical school, first of all, which I couldn't believe. And you're going to go into a residency, actually, one of the top residencies in psychiatry. And this pain that you're going through, it's going to enable you to reach people that no other people reached. In fact, for 35 years, you're going to focus on suicide prevention, and nobody's going to kill themselves. And plus, at the end of 50 years, you're going to be one of the top alumni ever from your medical school. And I can see that lost me at age 25 saying, no way. You know, you're talking about someone else. And so I've done this exercise where I've fused my future that I didn't even think I had with who I was. And every time I bring it up, even now, I can feel that 25-year-old feeling, starting to cry with hope, because I felt so down. So I just wanted to share that and resonate with that. But let's get back to Adil and his journey, and something we said we were also going to talk about, that is that, you know, one of the things you've discovered in your life is you're not that great with conflict, and that confronting conflict hurts a lot. But what you're discovering, and this is advice to our listeners, is not confronting conflict can hurt a lot more in the long run. So maybe you can talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think especially in Canadian culture, it's very common to be polite here and just be, you know, pleasant to everyone, and not really say what's on your mind. And it's just the way we're grown up here. And so I think it's a cultural thing to an extent too. And then, you know, for some personalities just tend to be people pleasers, and we don't want to really say what's on our mind because we're worried about hurting someone's feelings, or we're worried about the conflict it's going to cause, and then the hurt or pain that we might cause to them, and then what we have to deal with the consequences of that. And so I think I was conditioned, not just from society, but, you know, seeing my parents and just being like that for years and years. And then it becomes almost like, you know, at the first sign of conflict, you just kind of you just avoid it, and you just don't want to even think about it. But if you want to be a leader, or if you just want to have good relationships with people, they actually appreciate it so much more when you're direct and clear with them than you going around and talking to someone else about it, or, you know, complaining or venting. And then sometimes it comes back to bite you because they find out. And that happens to people all the time, and their relationships get ruined that way. And so just being upfront and transparent and talking, you know, just like you always say, right? You just listen, and just being able to listen and talk with and have that open conversation goes such a long way. And I think, you know, for me, as someone who has his own business, what I learned in the past few months, especially, is that by not being direct with people, they can make assumptions, and those assumptions can lead to bigger issues too. Because in the first place, you didn't want to deal with a small conflict, and that small conflict becomes a lot bigger. So if you dealt with it in the first place, it would be a big problem. So it's so much, you know, and this, I think this comes back to the whole education system, which is, I know why you're working on a certification, which is great. So because I don't think people are actually taught how to deal with conflict, and there's not real education on it. So you can't really expect people to be good at something that is a skill. Some people have it naturally, but most people don't. And how are you going to, it's just like any skill acquisition, you have to practice and you have to build that muscle, and it takes time. And so I think people, they can find it very, very uncomfortable at first, as I did, but over time, it's like a muscle. It gets better and better, just like discipline muscle and just like your physical body muscles. Those are all things you have to keep working at, and they get stronger with time.
I'm curious, Adil. I mean, I think you're right. I think that it really is something that we should be taught. In fact, communication generally is something that we should be taught in schools, but we're not. Everybody assumes that because we can speak words, we communicate. Yeah. But I'm curious just to find out, when you feel that concern or fear of you know, being in conflict, where do you feel it in the body, and how does that make you feel?
I definitely feel it in my stomach.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of uneasy butterfly feeling. And yeah. And so I just want to, so my instinct is just to do the ostrich thing, which is just bury your head and not deal with it.
And does that feeling go away? That's the question as well.
Well, if I don't, no, it doesn't. That's the worst part.
Exactly.
You just think about it. You just think about it more and more. And then you're just like, why didn't I just deal with it in the first place? And then it just ends up being one of those things. And sooner or later, it always comes back to bite you.
It does. Yeah. So just a perfect example of what Mark was saying about how, you know, these things just build up and build up until we actually learn to deal with them. Isn't it, Mark?
Yeah. You know, I can't resist the temptation. We have Canada and Britain here. And I'd never thought of the given that Canadians are polite and a lot of Brits are not.
Aren't we?
In terms of the, well, you can be, but the approach to conflict, when I think of you know, what goes on in British Parliament, the equivalent of it, but you know, Brits are not afraid to argue. Brits, but Canadians maybe, and I'm just thinking globally, has Canada, you know, just breathe the sigh of relief. Oh, I'm glad we've got the Atlantic between us, because they're so rude. You know, I never thought about it globally that I wonder what it's like. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking that's a very broad, sweeping statement and generalization there, Mark, about
it us certainly being is. Rude. Well, hey, I'm an American. We assume. We assume all kinds of things where there's no evidence, facts-based than evidence, but I just was seeing the distinction.
Yeah, I think you'll find that we have the full spectrum of people who are very happy with conflict and conflict avoidant. It is interesting, though. I always think that we're the British tendency is more passive-aggressive. And so, you know, you don't go weighing in. Would you say, Adil, that's very much kind of what we're known for, I think.
Yeah, I would say so. Canadians can be like that too. They'll never be aggressive, but they'll sometimes be passive aggressive.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh, you don't have to do that if you don't want to.
Meaning do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are Canadians, this will show you how ignorant I am, do Canadians steer away from sarcasm?
In general, no. I would say we have a culture that's pretty humor-wise, I would say is very, yeah, similar to Americans that way. But the interesting thing is in the workplace, people tend to be, you know, I don't know. It's just, I think it's just like the culture here is just so like focused on just, you know, just superficial, you know, very superficial type of discussions and stuff like that. Like there's no real connection and stuff made at work. I don't know if it's like that. I find in, you know, like in where I was working in Dubai for the winter, And in Dubai, Middle East, like people take a lot more breaks and they take a lot more time to talk and just hang out and have tea and do the other things. And whereas here, you know, I find the culture here is just, you know, you go to work, you have your superficial discussions and then you just go home and back at it again. Whereas I find in, you know, over there, they tend to want to connect with people more.
Yes, I think that's very much a Middle Eastern thing, taking the tea and doing the proper introductions and the proper formalities and having tea. Yeah, very important. Yeah, but not like that in the US.
What's it like?
Because you don't know what you don't know what tea is in the US. That's the thing.
Yes.
Boy, we're so crude and rude and immature and proud of it. I mean, you know, I have this theory that I don't want to get into politics, but that the world is, you know, almost pleased that we have Trump because we're getting our comeuppance.
Yeah.
You know, that for so long, you know, you've held yourself as somehow because we, you know, because you're so powerful and rich and we've been dependent on you to support us in some ways, but you can be a tad arrogant and full of yourselves. And we never liked that quality of you. And you're not even a curious country. You know, you're not that you don't read books. You know, you all want to be influencers instead of someone who's educated. And, you know, it's a little bit you're getting your comeuppance now. And we're not exactly taking delight in it, but, you know, we're kind of amused by it.
I think Trump is very much a man who's, you can hardly say he's conflict avoidant. He's very happy to have conflict, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Where are you, JJ, about conflict? Are you conflict avoidant or are you, do you step into it or a combination of both?
Oh, well, if you'd heard me complaining about lunch the other day, you wouldn't have said I was conflict avoidant. In fact, my friend said, just remind me never to get on the wrong side of you ever. So I think I was when I was younger. But, you know, I was a journalist and you kind of had to push yourself through stuff. You couldn't really be conflict avoidant. You were always being shouted at in the newsroom, you know, and you had to give as good as you got. So I had it, I think as a child, yes, I was. But I had that sort of, I was going to say beaten out of me, and not literally, but I was, you know, given a different form of socialization at work for many years. And so now, no, I don't avoid conflict as such. I don't particularly enjoy conflict. I don't like it. However, if something has to be said, I'll say it. Yeah. Or if something has to be done, I would do it. Not necessarily in an antagonistic way. I would try to, you know, be reasonable and rational. I'm not sure quite how. I was very reasonable the other day over this appalling lunch. It was one of the worst plates of food that had ever been set before me, which was a great disappointment. I've learned, and I've learned that you have to let it out. So, you know, if you're avoiding the conflict, like we were saying earlier, Adil, you know, you avoid the conflict and it just sits there and it sort of eats away at you. And then suddenly it'll boil over. It's like a beach ball. These things just kind of, you suppress them, you suppress them, and you suppress them. And then just like a beach ball that you hold down under the water in the sea or the swimming pool, it'll suddenly bounce right up and hit you in the face. And so I've learned that getting it out there is much better. And in fact, somebody said to me, one of my swimming companions, because Adil, I swim in the fourth estuary here on the east coast of Scotland. And one of my swimming companions said to me the other day, yeah, you know, you do get grumpy, you know, you get annoyed, but you let it out and then you move on.
Yeah, that's a healthy way to do it. And I think one of the things, you know, everyone now there's a culture of, you know, everyone wanting to be happy kind of thing where it's like, you know, I want to do what's for my happiness. But people don't realize one of the best predictors of happiness is actually the quality of your relationships. Mm-hmm. So if your quality, and how do you have good quality relationships with your spouse or with other people? It's by being honest about your feelings and being transparent. And when you're not, those feelings, like you said, they become resentful or they boil up. But unfortunately, we're not taught how to actually do that. And so it's a learning process a lot of us have to go through, and we lose a lot of probably people in our lives, or people with relationships get destroyed because they just never were taught how to deal with it properly.
Yeah, one of the things that I suggest, and I've suggested this to a deal, is the more you can be proactive as opposed to reactive, the better in life. Because if you let things build up in you and then you're reactive, when you're reacting, you know, it's usually coming from your, you know, kind of your lower fight or flight brain. You know, it's not particularly constructive. And one of the things that I suggest if you're in a partnership, whether it's a business partnership or a marriage, is that you formally pick a time when you meet, you know, once a week, once a month, and you have some rules for that conversation, and you bring up anything that causes you to not look forward to meet, seeing the person. Because, you know, if you're not looking forward to seeing someone, you get a conflict, you know, and relationships that you're in, you know, you want them to be ones in which you're always looking forward to seeing the other person, because that's where it optimally starts. You know, and JJ, you know, I hope we have that relationship that, because I know that I can do things that are annoying, and that, you know, that as we move forward as co-hosts and friends, that, you know, that that we'll be able to say, you know, here's something that I need to talk out because, you know, you're rubbing me the wrong way, Mark. We had a mini thing like that because she had to keep reminding me of the Zoom link. And she said, Mark, I've sent you the Zoom link for all our interviews. Just check it out. And I could tell she was a little ticked. And then I was like a little boy saying, I found it. I found it. And I went back. I said, guess what? I found the Zoom links. And I'm sure she was laughing, but I'm sure we'll revisit this. But does that make sense to proactively and formally meet with people that you have a working or personal relationship, and then say, what, if anything, is causing you to not look forward to seeing me?
I think that's a great idea. I can see that some people might find that a little bit too California psychology kind of thing, but I think it's a good idea. I know it is, yeah.
So what's your conflict with California psychology, JJ? At least we don't have the tabloids killing people.
And on that note, I think we'll go for a break. And indeed we will. We'll be back with more banter and interesting stuff after these messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living. A people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ the Practical Alchemist, Dr. Mark Goulston and Dr. Adil Khan. And Adil, you're a practicing doctor, and I think Mark, you had an interesting question for Adil.
Well, one of the areas that I do advise and consult is on burnout, and the burnout, at least in America, for healthcare professionals, it's epidemic, and I think what contributes to the burnout, I actually wrote an article on when you're owned by the corporations. And the corporations are owned by investors who don't even know that they have in their investment portfolio these things. And you're being squeezed by the corporations on one side, and they're not particularly empathic because they want you to generate money and see more patients. And then you have to deal with the frightened or angry patient or the entitled patient. You know, you're really between a rock and a hard place. And so I'm wondering if you ever experienced that, Adil, or is regenerative medicine so new that you've kind of maybe escaped a little bit what a lot of doctors who are not on the cutting edge of medicine have to deal with?
Yeah, well, I'm unique. I can give a perspective on both because I was actually initially a family physician, and family physicians have the highest burnout rate of any doctor, at least in Ontario, Canada, which is where I'm from. They just did a survey. They just published it like a couple of weeks ago showing that the primary care physician burnout rate is something like in the 60%, something crazy, which is, it's because of, like you said, they're getting, it's insurers, it's the corporations, and then it's also all the paperwork, and there's very little patient care and actual medicine going on. And there's just a lot of bureaucracy. And so it's not very rewarding from that perspective. But I think, yeah, I think, you know, I've seen the evolution of my career. So I can share, you know, both sides of kind of the coin, which is one side, you have this very like traditional, you know, model, which was designed for more acute, you know, medicine. It's not great for chronic care of disease because you only get like 10, 15 minutes with an appointment, because that's the only way you're going to get remunerated properly for the insurance companies to pay you and to make a decent living. So on one side you have that, and then, you know, and then now I'm completely private medicine where everything I do is not covered by insurance. And so I have a very different, I definitely get entitled patients because, you know, when you're dealing with this, you know, billionaire or whoever, they you have to go on their schedule, and they, you know, they expect certain things. But I find personally the biggest thing for me, the reason why I personally don't burn out is because my purpose is bigger than just myself. Meaning I'm not just working hard and, you know, helping people just for myself. I think I'm doing something bigger, which is hopefully changing some of the landscape of, you know, medicine and the narrative around what's possible with, you know, cellular and gene therapy, as well as, you know, inspiring a younger generation through my social media and so many other doctors following me and all that. So on top of that, there's a whole side of it of, you know, being able to take care of people like in my family and like other people that rely on me. So I'm not just doing this for myself. I'm doing it for obviously my kids, my wife, but also my parents, my siblings. And now I'm reaching a level of success where I can even, you know, take care of my cousins and other family members, and they're working in my businesses, and, you know, and I have, you know, so many, hopefully I'm going to build so much wealth that I can share it with some of the people I love and care about and then give back to society. So now I'm on a, you know, I'm on that kind of trajectory, hopefully. And so I'm trying to look at the big purpose of what I'm doing. And because I have such a big vision and like, I feel like I have a very big purpose in life, it keeps me motivated even when I've worked for 70 hours a week and I've done, you know, so much and whatever it may be, I'm not going to feel burnt out just because I have a big reason as to what I'm doing. But when you're the problem is when you don't have progress in a job and you're just doing the same thing over and over, then you're gonna burn out. My job, I continuously progress, and my progress, it's almost like self-development, or like, you know, it's like you want to develop yourself as a person as you get older, and hopefully you're a better person when you're 50 than you were when you were 30. But with the job, if you're just doing the same thing when you're 30 that you're doing when you're 50, of course you're going to get repetitive and burnt out, and you're going to not enjoy it because you're just doing the same thing. So you have to, I think you have to find a way to keep on progressing. And that's what keeps honestly, I think progress, I think Tony Robbins said this, he said progress equals happiness, because you have to keep progress, you know, progress is so important to our innate desired. And I think it's in our DNA to want to keep on progressing, whether it's not just in our careers, our relationships, but in every way.
Yeah, because I think if you feel that you're just standing still, it can be very frustrating, and it really does drain you. Having the energy of seeing that you're making progress with something really spurs you on and keeps you going. And I'm not sure about progress equals happiness, but I kind of see where that's coming from. What do you reckon, Mark?
I use the metaphor of spinning your wheels versus traction.
Mm.
And I know that in times in my life when I have felt depressed, it's because I feel like I'm spinning my wheels, meaning I'm not getting anywhere. But when I am doing something in which, when I'm doing something is actually accomplishing something, is actually moving forward, actually having traction, it's a wonderful feeling. And as I'm listening to you, Adil, I can just see how the field of regenerative medicine, and now you're including stem cells, that you must have this great feeling of traction. It's like, wow, I am a link into the future. I'm at the leading edge. They're not quite Elon Musk, not saying that he's, you know, all that great, but he represents a link into the future. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think he's kind of tolerated because he's a link into the future. And you're pretty easy to get along with, so there's not much to tolerate except your conflict avoidance, but you're working on that. But I can see how you feel a sense of traction, you know, that you're riding this wave that's connected to the future and that people are excited about it. And also Adil is one of the most informed people in this area that I've run into. And one of the things that he pointed out, I think, on our podcast is, you know, if you're going to be working with someone who's in stem cells, they should be researchers. They shouldn't just be people who are doing plug and play and don't even understand it. And that made a real impact on me, Adil, because I could see a number of people just jumping on the bandwagon. Oh, we're going to do stem cells and we're just going to do whatever. And they don't really know what they're doing because they're not also interested in understanding it. They just want to apply it and make money. And I was so impressed with how informed you are about it, how responsible you are. But what do you think about the notion, either of you, of traction versus spinning your wheels?
It's a good feeling. Yeah. What do you think, Adil?
Yeah, no, I think for people in their jobs and especially physicians, like that's the problem. They feel like they're not getting anywhere because they're working in a broken system. And so the system is designed, like, it's just, so there's so many issues with that. And it's a really tough problem to fix, but you know, because there's so many systematic issues that have to be addressed to make it so that the doctors can actually feel like they're getting traction and making a big difference. I feel like I'm making a big difference in my patients' lives because I get all, like, you know, most of them have already seen other doctors and tried other things, and they've tried all the traditional stuff. So they're looking, they've pretty much lost hope. And if I can give them hope and help them again, it's the best. But a lot of doctors feel like, you know, they're just getting a pill for something that's just a Band-Aid, or just feel like it's a revolving door. You know, they don't really feel satisfied. And I work with a lot of pain doctors, and many of them are burnt out because they're just doing cortisone or nerve blocks. And it's the same thing. And they're just, I've had so many doctors approach me just in the last few weeks asking if I'm hiring, just to see, you know, they just want to get into something different. And they want to, and I think, you know, people, I think if you have good intentions, that makes a big difference too, right? If you're trying to do something because you actually want to help people or you want to make a difference, then that usually leads to good things. But if you're doing it just like Mark was saying, like just for money, which a lot of people do, then it just usually leads to not good things.
you know, something I never understood this, and I don't know if this will be new to you. So I'm coaching another doctor who's in infectious diseases. And I wasn't an infectious disease. I was a psychiatrist. And maybe this explains the burnout in psychiatry. And I said, why are you doing infectious disease? He says, you know, we're not like a family doctor, an internist. We actually go in and cure something. I mean, you have this, we find out what it is, and we can actually generally give you a treatment, an antibiotic, and you're better. Whereas a lot of the, you know, well-intentioned internists and family doctors, and you're doing maintenance. Well, this is how we do your diabetes. This is how we deal with your arthritis. This is how we deal with such and such. Oh, and by the way, you need to be compliant, which none of the patients are. And, you know, whereas if it's infectious disease, you know, most of the patients will follow a course of, you know, antibiotics or whatever. And I never thought about that. And I said to him, I said, oh, you're like an orthopedic surgeon. You get in, you get out, and you know, then the next thing. And I can see how a lot of the medical professions feel like they're spinning their wheels. You know, well, you know, do the best you can. Try and stick to the diet. Oh, you need to exercise. And then, you know, then they don't. And I could be burning out a number of my doctors.
But it is a system that needs to change, isn't it? I mean, I think everywhere, the allopathic, I'm a big advocate of natural healing and natural medicine and, you know, food, eating well. And I do feel that the typical system, I mean, we've got very different systems here between here and the US, but the typical sort of medical system, even in Europe and Canada, could do with a bit of an overhaul, because we're always treating, or as Mark's saying, maintaining rather than helping people actually get over stuff, which is what you're doing with your work, I would
guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and that's the future of what we're doing, is you're going to have targeted precise cell therapy and using gene therapy as well, like, or gene edited stem cells, where you can target specific pathology and actually cure them or put them in remission. And you know, that's already starting to happen, but the best thing would be if people didn't have disease in the first place.
Correct. Yes.
Which is restructuring. But the problem is that the environment is set up for people to fail. It's Indeed. Hard to get enough physical activity. Processed food is way cheaper. There's just so many issues with the way society, but it's, you know, that comes back to why is society structured this way? It's because of big corporations and big corporations and big pharma, big food, and all those industries have, you know, there's a reason why society is the way it is. Let's just say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And on that note, time for us to wrap up. It's been an absolute joy to have you on the show today, Adil. Mark, do you have any last words? It sounds like something terrible is about to happen.
No, this has been wonderful. And JJ, you need to have him on your show, The Alchemist.
Yeah, we will do. Well, maybe we'll have a chat after this, Adil, and sort something out. But yeah, it's been fantastic having you on. Thank you so, so much. If anybody wants to speak to you, can they find you easily online? Is there somewhere?
Yeah, you just Google my name, Dr. Adil Khan. I think the first thing that comes up is my Instagram, and there's an email on there they can send an email to, and great. Pretty accessible. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, Dr. Adil Khan, thank you very, very much for being on our show today. And thank you to everybody who's listening. And if you'd like to hear more, just check us out on ukhealthradio.com or the UK Health Radio podcast, which is everywhere that you listen to podcasts. So do go and check us out. And if you do like us, please subscribe and share, because you never know who's going to listen to this, and it's just what they need to hear. So on that note, from me and Mark and Adil Khan, thank you so much, and goodbye for now.